I have the honor and privilege of introducing two of the media stars, one on television and the other in the print media. Before I get started, I'd like to talk about the media market within the Tampa Bay area. In Tampa Bay, we are the 12th largest media market in the United States. And if you look at the Tampa side, they have Channel 13, Channel 8. You got a great business newspaper, the Tampa Bay Times. On this side, of course, Bay News 9. I forgot the Tampa. Is it Tampa Tribune or the St. Petersburg Tribune? Okay. And on this side, we have the Tampa Bay Times, which is the former St. Petersburg Times. Also within St. Petersburg, we have the new media, which we have right here, radio.com. There's a blogger out there. I forget his name, but he reports a lot of political news. But in today's media market, you need current, up-to-date news. You want professional journalism, professional reporting. And sitting here right next to me on my right and left are two outstanding media stars. First, from the St. Petersburg or the Tampa Bay Times, Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper, we have Adam Smith. Adam's been with the newspaper for about 20 years. When Adam started with the Times back then, it was the St. Pete Times. They kicked him up to Pasco County, and they weren't too sure about him. So he covered the 4-H projects, the local courthouse. You know, who's getting married, who died, and so forth. And he kind of evolved out of that role. But there was something strange about Adam. He kind of dressed like, you know, this baseball comic, Bob Uecker. Well, he had the Bob Uecker image, okay, and his hair all over the place. But in reality, we're looking at someone who is an award-winning journalist. According to the Washington Post, rated one of the top 10 political reporters in the United States. To my right is Bay News 9, El Rochelle. Very respected anchor within the Bay Area. In my opinion, the top anchor in the Bay Area. Al's been in the business 43 years. He's won 3 Emmy Awards. On a personal note, Al is a deeply religious man. He's very much a family man. He's married with his wife, Jennifer, for 38 years. They have 4 children. They have, I think, 7 grandchildren now. And he's very much a family man. But Al is award-winning. He won 3 Emmys, and he's just an outstanding anchor. And I want to introduce our program, and we're going to talk about the election results. Thank you.
We'll start with the worst hair. And I'll be quick, and so we can have as much time for questions as possible. And I should start with the qualifier that if you are a friend of Bill Foster's, I have nothing to do with our editorial board. So don't blame me. In my job, we've got 3 big things going on. We just got through the city election. We've got the Bill Young race. Everybody calls it Bill Young's seat, and it still does feel like Bill Young's seat, even though it's not. It's our seat. And then we've got Charlie Crist versus Rick Scott, which is going to be extraordinary. So quick thoughts on the Christman race. I think probably everybody in this room would acknowledge it's extraordinary that a city where people seem to feel so overwhelmingly good about the direction of the city still ousted the incumbent, and I was surprised at the margin. I mean, it wasn't even close. And I think for people who have been in this area for a while, Rick Christman just really had the secret sauce. This was the first time where we didn't have an insurgent candidate, somebody that made a lot of people, whether it was Kurtzinger or to a lesser extent Bill Klein or Dennis McDonald, that made people, Kathleen Ford, that made a lot of people anxious, made a lot of the business community anxious, sometimes said some nutty things that raised eyebrows. Christman didn't do any of that. That's why, you know, it was striking to me, the Chamber, for instance, they endorsed Foster, but they were pretty passive about it. Next up, Bill Young's seat. I would encourage you to walk up to Bob Galtieri, who is not running for the seat he announced today, and just say to him, bop, 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 bop. You know, right now it's Alex Sink. I think it was inevitable she was going to clear the field. She's a huge name. I don't know how big the carpetbagger thing is going to be, how big of an obstacle that's going to be. David Jolly formally announces about an hour from now. He is a formidable candidate. Most people in this room probably don't know much about him. It seems like it would be surprising to me if the Republicans really do manage to avoid a primary, which they would dearly love to do. And lastly, Charlie Crist, Rick Scott is going to be the marquee race of the cycle in large extent, and it's going to be an extraordinary study in negative ads. I mean, it's true. We're going to see tens and tens of millions of dollars in negative advertising. I had dinner with somebody on the Scott campaign just a couple weeks ago who put it to me like this. We've got really no choice. Our goal is to gut Charlie Crist. And that's what you'll see. And so you've got a guy who's run statewide forever, a person who is an opportunist. People know it. They tend to like him. They have a sense of Charlie Crist. We'll see what tens of millions of dollars of ads, you know, there's a chance that by the time it's over, Charlie Crist will vote for Rick Scott and won't vote for himself. And I will pass it over to our show.
Thanks, Adam. I have learned a lot from this guy right here, I'll tell you. When I do a lot of interviewing at Bay News 9, which is one of the reasons I stay there, because I really enjoy the mind challenge of having all these topics thrown at me, and on Fridays is usually my interview crazy day. I had a day a couple months ago where I interviewed 11 different people on 11 different subjects in less than 4.5 hours. So I really enjoy that challenge. But what's been fun about working with Adam is that I was always too polite with politicians. And particularly, I think that I did an interview many, many years ago with about to be the governor of the state of Florida, Governor Graham. And I remember asking one question, and 5.5 minutes later, I asked the second question. And have learned that there is a polite way to interrupt a politician to try to get the point across that the audience needs to hear. In our role at Bay News 9, we're very, very fortunate to have this partnership with the Tampa Bay Times. I love working with Adam because he knows all the minutiae. We kind of have a good cop, bad cop. I'm the good cop. I talk about things like, what's your favorite color, you know, and those kind of things. And then Adam goes, what about that $800,000 you absconded with, you rascal? You know, so it ends up being a good relationship, because I think that anybody that is interviewed in our program knows that we're fair. And that's what we intend to do. And when we ask questions, my question is, I always get most of my questions, and I told Gary this, guess where I get them from? Aisle number 4 in Publix. When I'm walking through, I just keep my ears open and I just hear what the people want to ask. And I'm not particularly trying to impress myself with the kind of tough questions I can ask. I just want to know, hey, what do you believe? Why do you believe it? Why are you doing what you're doing? And are you kidding me? So when you kind of add that degree of skepticism, it makes everything work out really well. Our political connection show, the number one rated political show in the Tampa Bay area, we started out just in the 11 o'clock time frame, expanded to 8 o'clock in the evening, and I can tell you that 3 out of 4 Sundays out of the week, we will beat the national morning programs. So we are very, very fortunate that we have a great following in this area. I'm also curious, how many of you are under the age of 50? Okay, 49 and a half. Okay, what is this? Okay, I'm just really curious because I don't have any observations about these races, but one thing that I am concerned about is that the growing cynicism toward politicians and toward the whole political process. Particularly concerned about, as we're talking to people, I mean, I don't know, but when you grew up, when I heard the word compromise, basically that's how the United States came together. George Washington, as you remember, did not want anybody to vote who was not a property owner. Gee, what would have happened to this country had that gone through? So that the art of compromise has kind of become this dirty word, and I'll tell you, it is one thing that I always ask every candidate. Now, I realize, this is maybe where Adam and I vary just a little bit, is I don't understand the big deal between flip-flopping. I mean, I understand that, you know, it's like this ultimate sin, but if I'm standing in the middle of the highway and I've told everybody, you know what, I'm not going to move from this spot in the highway, period, no matter what happens, but a semi comes at me 60 miles an hour, I'm going to flip and I'm going to flop out of the way. So those are just kind of some of the issues that when we talk to the candidates as we try to raise. Lastly, I think when it goes back to Christman and the Democrats about why they seem to be doing so well lately is because they have really mastered the internet and the web. I can tell you that 24 hours before this election occurred in St. Petersburg, I got a personal note from Barack Obama the President of the United States, through Obama for America, sent me a personal note reminding me to go out and vote in the mayor's race. Now, I sign up for all of the emails from all of the parties, so I'm sure I confuse all of these mass distributors of information because they can't figure out, where is he? Where is he? Which is good. But having said that, I think you're going to be seeing that as being a growing trend. The Republicans just really don't seem to have their act together as much as the Democrats did as far as the new media is concerned, and I think Adam would attest to that. And it's interesting because for some reason this last presidential cycle, the most popular contribution was, guess how much? $3, $3. Every time a communication came out of the DNC, all they asked for was $3. Just $3. $3. Well, it may not seem like much, but when you have, you know, 10, 20, 30 million answer with $3, it's just one of those areas that we in the public are going to have to continually watch in terms of how the internet is being used. And lastly, I'm always perplexed by why in our society today that personality always seems to trump policy. I don't think that's a good trend going forward in the future. I would hope that our viewers are not, and listeners are not, what one radio commentator has called the low information voter. That's the part that scares me in our process, is that we need to have people that know more about what's going on, that ask questions, that read newspapers. You know, I'm surprised how many young people don't even read the newspaper anymore. That's not good for society. And also that the internet came with the promise, oh, we'll have all this wealth of information, we'll all be better informed. Well, you know what we all do? We all go only to the media that we agree with. We tend not to go to the other side. So in this quest to have a better informed electorate, I don't think that there's anything that makes that better than people just wanting to be curious and wanting to have a say in the way that they are governed. And lastly, what the heck does the city of St. Petersburg want to do with a pier? Can't you people make up your minds? I mean, really, that's been the interesting thing in this whole debate about, well, what do you want? Somebody draws something out there. Why were you really opposed to it? And then, of course, all the misinformation that was out there that when the media was trying to divulge and explain to the public. But the public believes what it wants to believe, and I'll shut up now.
Thank you. We appreciate hearing from both of you. You both have provided a lot of insight for us, so thank you. At this time, we'd like to start our question and answer session. I'm going to let you each take turns. You have a microphone. You could either sit there or stand up, whichever is easier. It might be easier to stand so everybody can see you. I know you're tall and...
Hey.
Just saying. Anyway, Al, I'll let you choose the first question.
Oh, I get to choose?
You get to choose.
I have to ask? How about right here? You're just close.
I have a question for Adam. You seem to have assumed that it's going to be a two-way race in Congress. No, isn't there a way for a Republican candidate who has better name recognition, but perhaps not the financial prowess of Mr. Jolly, without naming any, maybe you could name names. Wouldn't somebody with great name recognition have a chance?
Yeah, and I think I wasn't.
It's off. Okay.
Yeah, and I think I wasn't clear because I'm assuming it's going to be it's just Alex Sink, and I have a hard time believing if David Jolly is definitely in, and he is more. I have a hard time believing he'll be the only one. He's not a household name. He's got a lot of experience in Washington. He's got a lot of connections where he's going to raise a lot of money. But I do think we're very likely to have a Republican primary. You're going to see a lot of pressure from Washington because this is the race everybody's watching. You almost never have a district that is truly competitive like this one, let alone a district that has no incumbent running. So there's going to be a lot of pressure. It's very hard to, you know, this is probably a $3 million race on both sides. And so they don't want to waste time on a primary. And you're going to have some people very well that may decide, I'm not going to go for this primary, but I'm going to run for the regular election in August when there's the real primary. Anyway, I do think there's a chance of another candidate. A lot of people have been dropping out like flies. Keep an eye on Frank Hibbard, the former mayor of Clearwater. He seems to be, as far as I can tell, the only one who is very serious. And Jack Latfella has a knack for causing troubles and being mischievous. He seems to have a problem with David Jolly, so Jack Latfella seems to be shopping for another candidate. So we'll see. Oh, yeah, next. How about Dave Zakim?
Just get into a different venue. Do you think in the element we are in today, with a lot of the shocking news, and I'm talking about the mental problem, individuals are taking guns into different venues, do you think that the news directors who are sending these stories up, are we providing too much news of this variety of families?
That at Vegas 9, we have the policies that were established very early on, which are called crime guidelines. We follow those guidelines to the letter. By that, we mean we actually look at the landscape. I'll give you a good example. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, we had 4 overnight murders. And so we had to look at that and say, okay, you can't not tell people about that. But then after we had the 4 overnight murders, they wanted us to do an interview trial. So what we did was we backed off on doing the Dante Morris trial because when you do so many negative stories in a row, people get the impression that that's the way things are. Now, I don't know about other news organizations. We do serve as a filter in one way or another, and we do have parameters that we follow as to what we will advertise and what we won't advertise. But I'm telling you, there are just some days when it just seems like it's a full moon and the world is going wacko. Now, I'll quote David Rankin, who used to say this, 99.9% of the time, there's nothing happening in the world. The other 0.1% is what you see on the evening news. What he said.
I think he said it best. I couldn't say it any better.
Yeah, great.
Bob Sikorsky, I have a question for you. You said that Obama only got $3. It seems to me that somehow you seem to forget that the night of Benghazi, he did not tell the truth about that attack, and then he was flying out of California for a $30,000 contribution, and then also talked about how well the Democrats are using the media. Why don't you say the media is defending and supporting the Democrats? Because guess what? What happens on the Times show? The question is, how come?
Well, I can answer the first part. You won't see that on Vegas 9 because we stay right down the middle on all those issues. It's not that we don't report them, but we don't report them with the vigor that, say, a Fox network does, or, on the other hand, some of the major networks come these other issues. Because we find that, as far as Bay News 9 is concerned, we are hyper-local. People want to see local news, and that's primarily what we present. Not that these other issues aren't issues that should be talked about in some light, and they are, and you can find out more information on those, but we're not trying to shield anybody from information. And the $3 things, believe it or not, because I talked to a bunch of Obama people, and literally somebody did a bunch of research and found out that the ideal amount of money to ask for people who do not normally contribute to a campaign is $3. I mean, somebody did research on that kind of stuff, so pretty shocking. You want to answer that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
We need to get somebody on the female side because we've done all the guys. Yes, back here. Thank you.
Why doesn't the media go back to candidates and try to force real answers to questions rather than just take the sound bites?
Well, that's a great question. And believe me, you would try. It's not easy, especially when you're talking about a presidential candidate where they are in a bubble, where you really very rarely do they take questions. Barack Obama very rarely gives press conferences. And when he does, if it's an hour-long press conference, he filibusters for so long, you're lucky to get about 4 questions out of it. And it's one of the things I've learned from Al and doing TV. You know, these politicians, you are trained to say what you're trained to basically ignore the question and say what you want to say and say your soundbite. And so one of the struggles you have, you've got somebody saying, okay, you've got 6 minutes left, you've got 4 minutes left. Sometimes you have to cut somebody off and try to get an answer. And sometimes you look rude if you do it 4 times because the politician is basically refusing to answer the question asked. we should do better at that, but that's almost the whole goal of a political campaign these days, is to not answer the question that you, not to, to only say what they want to say. There's a message they want to give out, and they don't want to stray from that. They want to do that as little as possible.
Yeah, I agree with the same thing. Any of the young talkers want to ask some questions?
Right over here. You have a question? $1.4 billion, that's Adam's and mine combined income from our shows. She was going to ask that.
So, my name is Summer, and obviously as a high school student, we're the emerging group of young voters. I actually just turned 18 today, and this election by 2 days. My question is, you brought up the fact that we really get information from websites. What do you suppose the media and press could do to bridge the disconnect between the younger generation and local politics so that facilitate a more involved and knowledgeable emerging voter pool so that we can make more involved sort of decisions which we have more superficial knowledge and be willing to vote
for
the facts?
For people like you to run for office as soon as you can.
Well, I think, you know, you get your information from websites and Twitter and Facebook, but really, in a lot of ways, you're getting that information from the mainstream media. I mean, what you're seeing on Twitter and Facebook is often an article that I wrote or a TV clip that Al did. So, you know, what gets young people more involved and more interested in public affairs? It's hard to say, and I think people have been asking that forever. It may be when your mayor starts reaching into your pocketbook and you're paying taxes, or it may be when your pothole is growing bigger and bigger and nobody's doing anything about it, or you can't get health care or something like that, that this stuff matters, and you'll see that more and more.
And actually, the more you have at stake in your own life in the election, the more interest you will take. And the reality is that people tend to become more conservatives they get older because they have more stashes of money that they would like to see actually be there when they retire, rather than having somebody say, don't worry about it, it'll be there, and then all of a sudden you get there, it's gone. So it's got to do with your own involvement. But I'm serious, you have to talk it up among your friends and say, here's why you need to get involved. And pick one, two, or three issues. Don't try to digest everything. But find a couple of issues that you know are important to you. Find lawmakers that agree with your position. Work with them. Get out there. That's how you keep people involved in the process.
How about... right there, Tom.
What is your explanation of the outcome of the Christ and Foster race?
Rick Priceman won. I'm not. I will tell you what other people have told us, because I'm not really free to tell you what my opinion is per se, because I'm not an opinionist and I'm not a bloviator. So I will tell you what other people have said. Other people, Chris Ingram, one of our respected analysts, basically said that somewhere along the line, maybe it was the pier, maybe it was Rays baseball, but those were two issues that seemed to need more direct leadership, according to them. And some of that direct leadership did not come forward at a time when a lot of people wanted it. Having said that, now that Mr. Priceman is the mayor, he will get to see in detail more of the details about the financial arrangement with the Tampa Bay Rays. And as I said before, he'll try to find out after 62 public hearings what you people in St. Petersburg really want it appeared, or do you even know?
I wrote about this the other day, and I think it's, to some extent, it reflects how well the city is doing. That the city, you know, nobody can say Bill Foster was a terrible mayor or that he's a bad guy at all. He's a very good guy. But people, I think, in this city has reached a point where they aspire to more. And being a decent mayor is no longer enough, especially if you've got an alternative. The Christman campaign ran a good, cautious campaign where they basically said, I'm not going to blow up City Hall, I'm not going to do something crazy, but I think we can do better, and it seemed to work.
I want to get some, let's go to the back table over there, the young lady with the glasses, thank you.
Absolutely. Mary Edmonds, as you're talking about the congressional race, I wanted to ask each of you, what do you think we should be looking for as we decide between or maybe among candidates who are going to be running in this election? We haven't had to think about this. during Bill Young's tenure. I never really had any real choices in the time I've lived in St. Pete. So what should we be looking for? What is going to matter in terms of our local presence, in terms of our representatives?
Well, I would say this, and this would apply to a legislative race district also that is competitive. If you're talking about a district that Barack Obama lost by 7 points, there's always going to be a Republican there. And if you talk about a district like this, this is a swing district. This is truly middle of the road district. And so often we have these people, they will campaign, whether it's for local office or federal office, and say they're independent minded, they'll do this or that. And then they get up to Washington or they get up to Tallahassee and they are terrified to do anything that goes against the leadership that puts them on whatever committee they want or helps them raise money. That's sort of why Mike Fasano in Pasco County got so popular, because he was a rare Republican that actually, you know, he could demagogue with the best of them, but he did what he felt was right even when it ticked off his leadership. So, you know, we're going to see two very reasonable-minded people, I would assume, at least two, David Jolly and Alex Sink, who probably are pretty independent-minded. Well, let's really press them and see, well, what would you have done? You know, would you have been like every other Republican and been willing to shut down the government if you couldn't defund Obamacare? Alex Sink, you know, where would you disagree, actually take a vote against Nancy Pelosi on a Democratic priority that you disagree with? So it's going to be tough, but I think you really want to see how independent are they, how much are they going to represent this ultimate battleground swing district as opposed to their party leader.
Yeah, and I would also say that the question that Alex Sink will have to answer is this. You're moving to Pinellas County. Whoopie dip. You're going to live in Feather Sound. When did you sit in traffic on US 19? When did US 19 in front of your business get all ripped to shreds? When did your beach need to be re-nourished? Are you going to Washington because the Democrats need help in the House? Or are you going to Washington because you will do what Bill Young really did, which was look out for the little people? And he did a great job of that. I know there are some people, the detractors will say, you know, he was as bad as anybody else about earmarks. But I'm telling you, the guy saved MacDill Air Force Base. If it weren't for him, MacDill Air Force Base, as we know it today, may not exist. So those will be tough questions that will have to be answered by anybody who runs.
Who, my turn? Linda.
Linda Lurie, this is for Adam Smith. Your article yesterday about the mayoral election gave many reasons why Rick Priceman won. You didn't mention the very strong editorial board support for him and a very strong editorial stand against Bill Foster. Was it not important? Were you not allowed to mention the editorial board?
nobody's watching, right? No, I actually do think. I think our editorial board has sort of been on a roll between Fluoride and County Commission, and they were pretty aggressive in this race. I was ribbing our editor of editorials earlier in the day about how nervous he must be, because if Bill Foster won, wow. They wouldn't have had a lot of visits from Bill Foster if he were in his second term. I think they made a big difference. I do. I couldn't quantify it, but they were very rough on Bill Foster and stayed that way through the campaign, whether you agree with them or not.
Lynn, you had a follow-up. Go ahead.
Why didn't you write it in the paper?
Space. No, I thought about it, actually. And I would add something else. That's easy cop-out if somebody says they didn't get in because of space. Sometimes it's true. Because I actually thought about it, and it feels like too navel-gazing to write about something we did. But I would, just as an aside, I would point out, everybody thinks the editorial board dictates what we do. I would argue, just as a reader, that our actual news coverage was significantly tougher on Christman than Foster. You know, there were two big front-page profiles. I thought Foster's was basically pretty positive and Christman's was pretty negative. So it just goes to show.
Let's have a look at one of our new members here that's just joining us right here in front.
We've all seen polling. Oh, excuse me, Brian. We've all seen polling where people are being disenfranchised, whether you're Republican or Democrat. You don't like your own elected official anymore. It's almost 45% of the country who want to see somebody else. Between Sink and John, They both have been in politics, but one has served a former representative, and one has been elected herself. How do you two see their political experience, one being elected and one being a former operative, playing out in the actual vote in the House?
I have no opinion. I don't. Go ahead. No, I'm real. I
think David Jolly, and I do think there probably will be another Republican, so we're not anointing him the nominee, but I think he will be able to say he can hit the ground running, yada, 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 he's got Washington experience. I don't know that everybody is thrilled with Washington experience. He's also a lobbyist. That's how he makes his living, and lobbyists are, you know, barely a notch above journalists in terms of popularity, so I'm sure he'll have to explain that.
Next question. Let's dive right here in front. You've had your hand up quite a bit.
I'm concerned about, they said, brace and tones on people taking jobs. Size is teachers, professors, newspapers, television, etc., ministers, and what have you. And what I'm concerned with is writers, not knowing so much, but some of the television stations and writers who obviously bias in some of their writing. So when you talk about a Foster to the Chrysler's one, I take a who wrote what. And it would be quite interesting if you would agree as to when you write, why do you write, how do you write, do you write on facts, or are you writing on your personal opinion?
That's easy for us. I don't have an opinion. I mean, I have an opinion, but we are, believe me, Adam and I both get as much hate mail from the left and the right. But the one guy who wrote me the email that said that I had a wonderful looking unit on the air the other day, I just want him to know that this really is my hair. This is not a unit. Okay? Admittedly, most of it has been moved from the back to the front, but the last time I checked, it's still all mine.
I'm just glad you're talking about your hair. I think everybody in journalism has there's no such thing as unbiased. Everybody's got their personal biases. Everybody's got their personal experiences, and you try to balance those out. Sometimes you hear people say, you know, if they think Al Rochelle's kind of a jerk and they're writing about him, or Adam Smith's kind of a jerk, then they're going to kind of bend over backwards to be a little extra positive about him. I think in that case, you know, two side-by-side profiles by the same writer, I think it's a smart writer who wrote what he saw, you know, and was looking at the records, and readers are not stupid. If they think this person is clearly being unfair in what they're writing, then they could dismiss it. If they think he's making valid, he's backing up what he's saying, then they can pay attention. How about the young guy?
Hi, I'm Sam Bitter from Seeing as politics today are very heavily partisan, how much do you agree with Mayor Foster's statement that the mayoral race this year moved away from a grassroots style of campaign and more towards a partisan race?
Go ahead.
I know his father, Sam Bitter, dresses as garishly as but that's okay. I think the partisanship, you know, there was a time, you know, I talked to somebody, when I was trying to find out who was the last Democrat elected mayor, I talked to Ray Arsenault to try to pick his brains, and he had everybody's party wrong going until recently, because people just in the city truly did not know what party these guys were and didn't care. And I think that really changed when, with Rick Baker, you know, he brought Jeb Bush down right away, and it was clearly he was a Republican. And I think that's, in a way, for better or worse, the campaigns got more sophisticated, more lavishly funded. And then I think this was probably the election where these are going to be completely partisan races from now on. And the Democrats, who sort of have failed at almost everything they do statewide, have had a lot of success in mayoral races, and they were all in on this one. And the Republicans were a little slow to the game, and they were too.
I agree. Same thing. Yeah, in the back, right there, with the curly hair. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Can you borrow
my box? Hi, I'm Black. Thank you both for being here. I'm an avid watcher and reader. With all the attention on the congressional race and the governor's mansion, looking at our local races, do you think people will delete all those requests for $3 because they believe that politics are local and help contribute to our local candidates? Or will some squeak through on the ballot because people aren't paying attention? in our upcoming races. We have school board, county commission. We have a lot of local pieces, but it seems like the focus is clearly on the congressional race and the governor's race.
Well, one of the advantages of having the focus on the congressional races and the governor's races is that more people will show out at the polls to actually vote. I mean, I'm still appalled. I spent a couple of years as a missionary in East Africa, where some of those nations were not so kind to people that tried to vote. So I'm always shocked and appalled. And if I could get on the air and preach, I would, when only 32% of the entire population of the city of St. Petersburg cared enough about this race to show up at the polls. I don't know what will happen, whether the $3 will do this, but all I know is that it's always been said, all politics is local. If you got a pit hole in the road in front of you, if you take action to try to get it fixed, you'll get involved in politics. But if you step back and let the machines roll and let them appeal to your lowest common denominator, which is fear, then we're in trouble. Then the local politician is going to have as much trouble as a national politician getting something to stick to make a person want to get up and vote.
I just think it kind of depends. If there's something going on that people care about, even if it's not the most important issue, if there's fluoride, if there's something that looks like your county commissioners are basically going to ignore science, suddenly the county commission race is going to get a lot of attention. You're going to start paying attention to what they're saying. If the school board wants to do something drastic, you're going to have more people paying attention, as they always do with the upper level races. You know, in some ways, those local races get more attention than who's the CFO or who's the attorney general. Those are the races that they really struggle to get attention for, even though they're raising a lot of money.
This would be the last question, please.
Yeah. Me again?
You go ahead, yeah.
Looking for a female.
Tiffany Vikas. I'm not crazy about having a candidate for governor, but with two such big names, what are the chances of someone else coming forward to run against Chris and Scott, and what are their chances of actually having shot at them?
Great opportunity for me to announce that I'm running for the state of Florida.
I think the chances would normally be really good, except you have somebody that is in the last election spent $75 million of their own money and made it clear he'd be willing to do that again. It's not going to happen. The Scott people were very, very worried that he would have a primary, a Republican primary opponent, and so they kind of let it be known he's planning to spend $100 million in this campaign, and all the people that were sort of sniffing around at that, they just disappeared. So there's no way that's going to happen, that a credible person could emerge as a third alternative.
And I just want to take a couple of seconds to thank you for those of you that didn't switch to Verizon, and for those of you in Elkwood and Wright House, and to thank you personally, because I know that when Adam and I do our programs, I mean, we're making a paycheck on it, but we do it for you. We do it for you and the voters that spend the time watching it, and I can't thank you enough for putting your trust in us. And I can tell you that Adam and I work very hard on what we do. We anguish, and if anything, because of our own personal views, you find out as a journalist, sometimes you tend to compensate on the other side. So when somebody's calling and saying, why are you being so difficult on the Republican? Or why are you being so difficult on the Democrat? Well, because we tend to try to play devil's advocate, because we know those are the kind of questions you want answered. And we don't want the politicians to show up and just spend 9 minutes of our time going through their talking points. But thank you again on behalf of the Bright House Network.
Thank you.
Alan Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. You'll each have one of our Tiger Bay Club mugs as a token of our appreciation, carving up a politician for lunch. And though you're not politicians, you do step in the mud a little bit with all of them. So thank you so much for being with us today. I want to remind you all, December 6th is a new program. It is with Alex Sink and David Jolly, our two individuals, candidates for office for the congressional seat. So please come. That's also our election. So December 6th, remember to come to that. That's our annual meeting and Board of Elections. January 8th is what we have tentatively set for our mayoral address with our new mayor. We'll give us a state of the city. January 22nd, we have Mayor Baker and Mayor Iorio, former mayors, will do a beautiful program for us. On February 5th, we have our legislative preview prior to our session in Tallahassee to see what we have coming up. And then our exciting annual event with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Daniel Ruth will be at the Mahaffey Theater. So where's Joe Jimenez? Thank you so much for making that happen for us. We're very excited to be there. And on March 7th, Congresswoman Kathy Castor, Vice President Art O'Hara, I cannot thank you enough. You have put together a skillful set of programs for this year and all the way into next year. And now what we're waiting for is... big surprise, Marion Edmonds. Come on up. We are adjourned. Thank you. All right, what was the question?
You've been listening.
And just for your information, people often ask, what was the question? She asked, what should we look for in our congressional candidates? What questions should we ask? What should we look for? Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to live coverage of today's Suncoast Tiger Bay Club Luncheon, featuring Adam Smith of the Tampa Bay Times, as well as Al Rochelle of Bay News 9. This is the 35th anniversary luncheon today, in the 35th anniversary year of the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club. About 125 people were here in the room at the St. Petersburg Yacht Club to hear this post-election analysis of the mayor's race in St. Petersburg, and as you heard, an extensive conversation really of politics in general nationally and here in the state of Florida. This program will be available this evening on our RadioSt.Pete.com archive for future on-demand listening at your convenience. And as you heard the president of the club say a moment ago, the next Suncoast Tiger Bay Club luncheon will be on December the 6th, and there has been a program change. Congresswoman Kathy Castor has been moved to March. Instead, on December 6th, you will hear the two announced candidates for the House of Representatives to replace the late Congressman Bill Young. Those are David Jolly, the Republican, and Alex Sink, the Democrat, and who knows, there may be more by the time we get to December 6th, but those are two confirmed speakers for the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club on December 6th. And again, as always, RadioSt.Pete.com will bring you the luncheon live and then available on demand after. Hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast and that you will continue to stay tuned and follow us at RadioSt.Pete.com for our extensive coverage of live local events, interviews with the people who make those events happen, and the area's most robust and extensive local events calendar, 24 hours a day, all packaged up with soft rock during the day, smooth jazz overnight, beach music on Saturday night, and soon local artists to be featured on Sunday night from our friends at MusicTampaBay.com. Thank you for listening to the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club. We've come to you live today from the St. Petersburg Yacht Club in St. Petersburg, Florida. RadioSt.Pete.com, I'm Joe Bordeaux. Thanks for listening.